Welcome to the Solari Report. Today is Thursday, May 23rd, 2019. This is Catherine Alston Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this weekend. I just got back from a great trip to Michigan. I flew up there on Monday, a wonderful subscriber who is an officer in the Republicans Women's Club of Bloomfield Hills, arranged for Dr. Mark Skidmore and myself to speak. We did that Tuesday night. Wednesday, we had a wonderful event for subscribers. Darlene Heckman, who runs our customer service, came down from the Upper Peninsula in Michigan where she lives, and they have a wonderful farm up there. She drove down, and we had subscribers from Michigan, New York, Vermont, Indiana. It was great. Anyway, I always love having subscribers find their tribe. Dr. Skidmore was able to join us. He is at Michigan State University, so in the nearby in the area. Anyway, one of the things that was interesting in all the conversations we had either on Tuesday night or Wednesday with the subscribers who gathered, we all feel that things are coming to a head. And there's beginning to be really deep appreciation that what we're dealing with is sort of a dividing line between good and evil and what is human and what is inhuman. And I think that can facilitate some very positive shifts. Anyway, one of the questions that came up after the Women's Club speech and a very good Q&A session, we went into the bar with about 10 or 15 of the members, and one of them said, you know, this is so overwhelming, it's hopeless, you know, I just don't even want to deal with it. And I said, that's just nonsense. And I quoted one of my favorite quotes from my pastor in Washington, if we can face it, God can fix it. And I said, look, you pay millions of people to run your federal, state, and local government correctly. And they can. They know what to do. But first, they need you to help them unlock the secrecy. They need transparency. So you need to face it, and then you need to pray. And if you'll just do those two things, you know, ultimately, you pay these people to do it for you, and they can. So the question is, how can we remove the secrecy and support them in what I call turning the red button green? It can be done. It's much easier than you think. Anyway, but don't ever say we can't do anything, because we can. But we're going to have to end the secrecy and bring transparency. And that's why, if you'll just look at it, what a difference it could make. It's astonishing. Other good news, we sent the final proof of the first volume for the 2018 annual wrap-up, The Real Game of Missing Money. It's gone to the printer today. It'll be here on June 7th, and we'll mail out then. I apologize for the lateness of it, but we wanted to get the full collection, everything in one place, and what a job that was. Volume 1 will come out, so we'll mail out here June 7th, June 8th, approximately that time. And then I'm hoping that Volume 2 will be out 2 weeks following. So if you're a premium subscriber, we'll mail it out to you at that time. If you are a digital subscriber and want a copy, we'll have them selling at the store, both individual copies, but discounts for buying bulk packages of 5 or 10. We really think you ought to consider sending particularly Volume 1 to your all the financial professionals in your life. I think you ought to send it to your CPA, your insurance agent, your bank, if you have a money manager, certainly your state and local representatives. Get a, you know, get 10 of those puppies and send them around, because this is what serious people need to look at to appreciate the changes that have occurred with FASB 56 and understand what they need to do and think about it. So please get this thing. The more we can get hard copy information on the missing money circulating, the more powerful the opportunity is for us to do something about it. Our theme tonight is developing tactics for the road ahead. It's inspired in part by the topic of our interview, Deep State Tactics 101. I thought I would take you down to the tactical level and give you a sense of all the different tactics I've dealt with in the process of trying to bring transparency to the missing money and stop the money from going missing. It really does help you think about some of the tactics that increasingly more of us are facing in our everyday life. There are several things going on. Let's look at the fundamentals. We are now grappling head-on, unprotected by financial bubbles, with the fact that we have a rising Asia and a peak everything scramble for resources. The market is clearly correcting the stock market, global stock markets, in the face of major challenges between the U.S. and China, but also Middle Eastern tensions as the Israel and the neocons continue to push for what would be a suicidal war. And we're also seeing serious weather challenges and related disaster capitalism that is interfering with spring planning and could have a significant impact on this year's food supply. Late last year, I encouraged you to be prepared for a recession this year or next. Now, the trade war could bring back more opportunity to America. It could also bring back higher prices. So we're going into a more challenging economic time. And it's going to be diverse depending on where you are and what your exact profile is. So I don't think this is a one size fits all. This is going to be a very quirky economy, but there's no doubt the stress is increasing and certainly the stock market is struggling. When you think about tactics, I want you to think about asymmetrical warfare. Look up asymmetrical warfare. Do a little bit of reading about it. But one of the things I'm discovering as I talk more and more with subscribers or other members of my audience is that most of us are not familiar with asymmetrical warfare. We're used to a sort of a more honest and more direct kind of warfare. You need to see the kind of warfare that's going on right now. So, as I said before, if we can face it, God can fix it. I think if you can understand what's happening in terms of asymmetrical warfare, you'll be in a much better position to develop the kind of tactics and apply them that you need. Okay, so let's take a look at the financial coup d'etat. $65,000 in America is missing per person, $90,000 per person on the bailouts. I suspect in the other G7 countries, there's some of that going on as well. But this, for the financial coup, America is sort of ground zero. That's $155,000 per person. Now, there's more fraud going on than just the bailouts and missing money, but let's just stick with that. $155,000 per person is $600,000 for a family of four. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of theft. You know, that's why some families don't have a house and can't send their kids to college, because that $600,000 has been stolen. You know, whether it's stolen out of the treasury or it's stolen in the form of currency debasement, there are many different ways it can come back and feel. Now, the last thing that Mr. Global wants is for you to figure out that $155,000 per person of your money is missing, or $600,000 for your family of four is missing, and come back around and demand it back. So what do? Well, you don't attack them about the missing money because you don't want that conversation to happen. You run modified hangouts on the missing money, and then you proceed to attack. Remember, the best defense is a good offense. One of the ways you attack is with projective identification. You turn the shriekometer on and attack your victim for what you, in fact, are doing. We're definitely seeing some of that. But the other thing is you play divide and conquer. So you, more than anything in this situation, you want to turn the younger generation, you know, against the older generation. So you want to use the younger people to increase your power vis-a-vis the parents and grandparents and keep the parents and grandparents offside so they can't start digging into, well, where's my $155,000 per person? And where's the $600,000 for this family? And what do you mean my pension fund's not properly funded? How do I get the $600,000 back? So you get the young people to turn on their parents, and take a look at what Mao did with the Cultural Revolution in China. That's a perfect example. And to a certain extent, it's part of what we're seeing, a more sophisticated version of the Cultural Revolution here in the United States. You want to play the divide and conquer game with things that are non-cash items. So you want to have people fighting about the abortion policy or LGBT policies. You want to keep them away from, you know, what's going on at the U.S. Treasury, what's going on at DOD and HUD. You definitely want to turn men against women. You definitely want to encourage lots of socialist talking and thinking, though if you understand the rules of how the money is managed in Congress, you know, that money isn't going to happen. And in fact, if you dig down into the socialist proposals, they're simply designed to help Mr. Global steal the rest of the real estate and then privatize everything. Of course, sex is a beautiful thing because it's a non-cash item, but it's something that's near and dear to everybody's heart. So whether it's LGBT issues or sex transition and trying to get all the young people to transition their sex, get them hooked on pornography, get them hooked on video games, weaken them with vaccines and poor nutrition, on and on and on and on and on. What you're trying to do is so overwhelm the people you've stolen from that they don't realize what it is your asymmetrical warfare is trying to achieve. You know, they're being attacked on these 20,000 divide and conquer issues because it's like Baskin and Robbins. There's 57 varieties, and the reality is if you can monitor the whole thing with AI and software, then you can have the equivalent of a 24/7 set of Stasi teams on every one of 325 million Americans that's online or has a smartphone. So if it seems like the United States is losing its mind, it's because the Shriekometer is trying to literally keep everyone discussing anything that will keep them from realizing the game on the missing money. Because remember, your goal is to keep all the money you've stolen and make sure they can never identify you as the guy who stole it. It's really funny. So one of the things that happened last week is that the reporter who'd written an article for The Nation about the missing money and done a very, very disappointing performance after Dr. Skidmore and I spent a lot of time with him, came out and did an interview with Lee Camp of RT. This just goes to show there's a lot more cooperation between the Russians behind the scene than you know. And Lee Camp looked very cowed and did an interview with a reporter from The Nation. And, you know, the whole point of the entire segment was, look, DOD is underspending its budget, and this is a non-cash item, and it's a terrible computer glitch, but that's all it is. There's no real problem here. And the beauty of it is there was not any documentation, no evidence, no facts to support this, but they had it from good intel, from inside. Insiders. You know, you can see the guy from The Nation is love getting stroked by the establishment. Anyway, so one guy tweeted out, I put it out and put a comment on it, and one guy tweeted out and said, God, if there's ever a journalist who needs to update his belief system, it's this guy. Well, then The Nation, who had just basically finished promoting this massive modified hangout on the missing money, comes out with a new article by a feminist who is saying the way to destroy, you know, our problem is capitalism, so the solution is to destroy capitalism, and the way you can destroy capitalism is by destroying the family. And you just want to fall over in your chair because basically what they're proposing to do is something that will destroy family wealth and destroy the power of the family. And the more you destroy the power of the family, the more every individual is kind of on their own and easy to control by the central powers. Anyway, so when I read this, I realized, okay, here's The Nation protecting the missing money with the modified hangout and turning around and proposing to basically get the young people to behave in ways that are certifiably insane. But again, that helps peel the young people off and keep everybody embroiled in destroying the family, which is going to weaken them even more, and it puts you in the catbird seat to keep the money and never have anybody realize the real game. Anyway, so Farrell was hysterical. I sent him a link. I put it out in a tweet saying, never deterred by a fact-based reality, here is the next mind treat brought to you by the people who paid Lindorf, that's the reporter, to make the $21 trillion problem go away. Now let's make families go away now that we've stolen all of their money. So you want to kill them before they can organize and take back the money. So Farrell writes me an email. He says, who knew that Mad Magazine took over The Nation? Because when you read this article, it's so bizarre. You can't believe it's not a spoof. as you watch the daily news, particularly coming from Washington and some of the campaign going on around the 2020 elections, you see there are 57 varieties of these divide and conquer sort of stories and tactics. And it's right now, they're clearly making it look very organic and overwhelming, but it's progressively more weird, more perverted, more violent. And a lot of that is to keep the attention away from the real facts and figures of what's happening economically, including the missing money. It's important to remember that the AI and software means that you and I can be tracked. Every one of 325 million people in the North American, far more in Europe and the English-speaking worlds, can be tracked with AI and software, all with the focus to optimize the people doing it, their political control, income, and assets. So when the shriek-o-meter is turned on you, it's hard to remember that it's simply an offense designed to produce a defense for the guys who stole your money. And that's why you need to be very discerning about how much energy and time you spend paying attention to the shriek-o-meter. You know, you need to spend your time and attention making sure more of your money doesn't get stolen and having your free and inspired life as opposed to giving your life to the shriek-o-meter. Here's the reality. Somebody's trying to harvest you, even harm or weaken you physically, depending on where you are in the particulars. Everybody's different, so I hate to overgeneralize here. But let me give you an example. John Oliver, and this video is up on the Salera Report under News, Trends, and Stories. He just did a show on mobile home parks. Big investors are moving in and buying up the mobile home parks and then using all sorts of shenanigans to get the rents up or to get people to move and just default on leaving their mobile home in the park. And then you can pick it up for a song. Anyway, I got a call today from somebody who's renting on a very temporary basis in a mobile park. She couldn't find anything and she's in the process of moving from one home buying another. So this was just a temporary spot. All sorts of things, she said, were going very mysteriously wrong. She felt terrible. It sounded to me like symptoms of electromagnetic interference. So I said, okay, let's map out the money around your situation. Well, it turns out a big developer bought the park, took it over and raised rates on May 1st. And that's the next day, May 2nd, was when all the crazy stuff started to happen. And I just said to her, connect the dots. The developers get a fast return by getting you out and, you know, flipping this property into somebody new where they can raise the rents even more. Anyway, what was her action? Get out as fast as possible. That could get really dangerous. If you listen to Deep State Tactics 101 and Part 1 and Part 2, what you'll hear is a lot of the electromagnetic weaponry that I first encountered was, in fact, being used by the real estate industry to get people out of the, you know, of the houses. They wanted to increase rents or they could take them into more of an assisted living context. So it's a perfect example. Keep your eye on the ball. Don't get tricked by asymmetrical warfare. If you think you're experiencing any of the tactics I describe in the Deep State Tactics series, there's a logical reason why. You need to map out the money and power around you and dig in and figure out what's going on, because I think if you listen to this series, it will really help. Let's turn to money and markets. It's clearly risk off. We see the U.S. dollar index up now 2.24% for the year, movement into the dollar. Fixed income, you really see the risk off. The long treasury ETF now up 6% for the year. If you look at all the charts, it says all fear and no fundamentals because, you know, if you look at the credit quality of a treasury, it has taken a very serious nosedive over the last year and a half. So, but people are reacting in the traditional way as if there haven't been any changes in the federal credit. So as the stock market is correcting, they're moving into the short term and long. Well, they're moving into fixed income. This is TLT is a long term. So it's going to be interesting because if the day comes when you need to continue to move into fixed income because of what's happening in the equity markets, and you will have to face the real credit issues. It could be quite astonishing to see what could happen. The intermediate ETF now up 3.91% for the year, the bond aggregate up 3.72%, and the high yield bonds junk up 8.42%. The clear message is, why were we worried about higher interest rates? Higher interest rates are not happening. It's going the other way. You see, I've seen several articles recently that economists are saying as long as the growth rate is higher than interest rates, we're okay. That's wrong. The insiders are okay. If you've listened to my interview with Chuck Marone of Strongtown and read his Lafayette, Louisiana study, it will help you understand why negative return on investment plopped out with massive amounts of federal grants that skim the real equity values to advantage the insiders does not a great economy make. We're growing technocracy with government money. It's a false prosperity that will work as long as you apply new technology and have selective depopulation, which is exactly what is going on. That's what the opioid epidemic is, and I suspect that is also what the push for vaccines was. So it's juice for the insiders, but it's draining the outsiders, and it's not okay. The more debt we layer on, ultimately, the worse it's going to be for the outsiders. Equities, we are clearly in a correction. We're down 5 to 20% off the high, and there's no sign of the bottom here. More and more indication that people are adding hedges in this kind of market. You basically have to give up your dividend yield if you want to buy a hedge, but it's clearly worth it. Is the bull over? I doubt it. But it's going to have to reset for a serious trade war that's, I don't see it ending anytime soon between the U.S. and China. So that tells me, given the trade war and some of the other things going on, that a major correction is likely. The S&P is still up 13.39% for the year, but clearly the latest turn of events on the negotiations with China, as well as the sort of the general economy, is that we're in a mood for back to basics. And you really see it when you see the writing on the Uber IPO. That was an IPO that was long expected. Lyft came out first. When Uber came out with the IPO, the lead investors were looking to downsize their position, never a good sign. And it's come off more from the initial offering than any IPO. It's lost more money for its initial investors than any IPO since 1975. So, but I think the message is, you know, we want real companies that can sell it for more than it costs them to make it. Uber has never had a profit and states literally in their risk section, in their prospectus, they may never make a profit. Well, in this kind of environment, you much more prefer something that can produce a real dividend on an enduring basis. So it's back to basics. The perfect example is if you look at the charts, the real estate line has crossed technology. Technology is clearly in a correction. The home builders now up 21.03% for the year. I would say we're approaching real bubble territory. And if you look at all the different things the financial community is doing to juice the mortgage market, especially now with interest rates down, you know, clearly there is a push to keep everything floating. VGK, the European ETF, up 10.05% for the year. Germany up 8.48%. So they've backed off a lot. The developed markets minus North America up 9%. China's really come off. China large caps now up 2.66% for the year. Small caps up 4.09%, so doing better than the large caps. The emerging markets still up. It's up 2.19%. Commodity index up 5.74%. Gold flat. It's down 7 basis points. And silver down 5.79%. Oil, which was up over 50%, has really had a major drop. It is now up 36.33% for the year. Clearly, a trade war means less demand for oil. So as things slow, less pressure on commodities, less pressure on energy. the Bitcoin and cryptocurrency market is having an interesting time. Bitcoin had really gotten hit. It started to go up. It flash crashed the other day, and now it's up significantly. You almost wonder if they need, it's time to pump Bitcoin again to kind of keep money flowing into certain places. As Dr. Farrell said, this is Hitler's dream, infinite money for secret armies. Anyway, I get the feeling they, certainly coming into the 2020 election, they want that. They want the whole Bitcoin market and vehicle in a healthy shape. And of course, I think they're still moving to cryptocurrencies, and there's a need to get that prototyping continued. The SEC is delaying their ETF approval. The day that you see ETFs made available at retail that will handle all the trading and custodian work in Bitcoin, I think you'll see tremendous amounts of money flow into that market. We also see an effort by international regulators to add more regulation to the cryptocurrency market. So all of these different moves say to me the central banks want a lot more prototyping. They want it done before they launch their individual cryptocurrencies. The China-US trade war has gotten very serious. And one of the reasons is that there is a battle royale between the Chinese and the Americans as who's going to control what 5G networks. There is a major push by the U.S. to get countries around the world to reject Huawei and not allow Chinese equipment. This, if you want to understand this, you've got to watch the Zero Days documentary about the Stuxnet virus and the Snowden documentary and movie. If you watch those, you really begin to understand what this is about, because the digital train tracks of a government, of the business in a place, all of those train tracks are being used to operate and control the world. So the Five Eyes country have a major advantage of managing a one-way mirror that, if I'm right, also can deliver mind control. And so the reality is, if you're going to control an economy in a place, you've got to control that channel. And there's a war between the Chinese. It's whether everybody's going to go across a channel, which is controlled by the United States and its allies. A very important of one is, or increasingly important, is Israel, which is sort of using this whole situation to promote itself as a major tech player. This makes this a zero or one fight. In other words, a digital infrastructure can be Chinese or it can be American. It can have the Chinese intelligence agencies can have access through whatever backdoors are in the technology or not. The U.S. intelligence agencies can have backdoors or not. Now, I think one of the ways the U.S. has managed to keep the reserve currency is by ensuring that as many people on the planet have smartphones and, you know, they control the one-way mirror in that place. Now, why does this make for a very difficult trade war? Because there's no win-win solution. It's either going to be the Chinese are going to have access or not. They're going to have a backdoor or not. The Americans are going to have a backdoor or not. And I should say American and its allies, including the Israelis. Now, here's the problem in the negotiation. You can't trust the U.S. You certainly can't trust the Israelis. And you sure can't trust the Chinese. So how do two untrustworthy players work together to create trust? Now, you can say, well, you know, we're the untrustworthy one. It's not China. Go check out Hong Kong. Spend a week in Hong Kong and feel how creepy they feel that China's moving in. Then fly to Thailand and compare what that feels like, because, you know, China's not moving in the way they are in Hong Kong. Remember, the Roman Empire and the British Empire went broke trading with the Chinese. In fact, it was opium that got the Brits back in the game and allowed them to ultimately win. But China has for centuries been the master of what I call intellectual capital competition model. You know, they make something, they bring you in. You teach them how to make it. They make it. They get better and better and better, and then they replace you and go on to do it again because it's a very high learning metabolism model. Now, the British were able to finally overcome it with opium, but if they hadn't, history would have looked very different for the West. It turns out Iran has asked China to now help them keep the 2015 deal together, which makes this situation even more interesting. We see more countries basically ban Huawei or their products. The latest is Switzerland. I put up a chart or a link to a chart in the notes for the money and markets of all the countries that have knocked them out. Let me just read you some. As of May 2nd, 2019, Australia, New Zealand, Japan, Taiwan, and the U.S. have decided to ban and phase out the company's products within their mobile networks. Meantime, the U.K. has proposed a ban of Huawei products for core parts of its new 5G network. Germany and France will increase security measures to safeguard against backdoors. Several European countries, including Denmark, Sweden, and the Netherlands, are still on the fence. And as I said, Switzerland, and then there's lists of others. Switzerland has now come across. So this is pretty serious. And you're, you know, basically what they're saying is you're an American plus allies controlled 5G, or you're going to be in China. You pick, and you better pick us. Meantime, the Navy is sailing through the Straits of Taiwan to the great irritation of China. As I said, I think the chances of war with Iran are very, very small, certainly this year, despite all the sort of chest beating and drum beating. I'm going to discuss the feasibility of war with Iran between the United States and Iran with Saker next week. So we'll go into detail with it there. But the bottom line is, I think it's fair to say Saker's analysis is that it would be suicide. We see 17 and then 18 counts under the Espionage Act against Assange. They're clearly putting Assange in lockdown. They want to make sure his knowledge doesn't get out and about. Someone does not want him talking or wants to make sure they're controlling all his knowledge, given what's going on with the president declassifying or delegating the declassification memorandum to Barr, and the Democrats once again going bizwack. You would think it has something to do with that flow of knowledge. And it clearly has to do with the flow of knowledge that could once again stop the U.S. from being able, or certainly Israel, from being able to persuade the U.S. to go to war with Iran. So whether the drumbeats of war or the extreme fears of the Democrats over the Barr investigation, there are numerous reasons why the powers that be might want Assange not in a position to share information on any of these things they consider to be critical. As I said, the administration has done a declassification memorandum on much of the evidence that relates to doing an investigation on the effort to use the national security state to get rid of Trump, both in the campaign and after the inauguration. So the powers to declassify have been turned over to Barr. So it'll be very interesting to see where Barr's investigation goes. We see in elections around the world, the Australian election, a surprise victory by the more conservative party. The interpretation is that climate change doesn't sell. People want the economy to be strong. I think that's part of it, but I think a bigger part is that Australia has played a very significant and brilliantly played role in the sort of balancing the interests of China with the interests of the United States. And it wouldn't surprise me if the conservative is in because the U.S. and European interests are much better served by having a faithful ally, given the latest developments in the trade war. So I think that North America has, and the Commonwealth has, very big interests on Australia playing an important leadership role. And that's going to be more likely to come from Australia that's focused on the economy and is comfortable with back to basics. In India, Modi wins and displays an exceptional consolidation of power. And one of the things that's interesting about his victory is now you clearly have a vision of a Hindu nation, not a diverse nation, not a Muslim, Christian. It's clearly a religious vision in part and very nationalist. And I think one of the reasons Modi did as well as he did is he's very, very focused on building prosperity and a strong economy. So big win there and continuity for India as a nationalist Hindu nation. There is something funny going on in Europe, and that is that the Bilderberg meeting location, Bilderberg meeting usually is in June in the first or second week. They have yet to announce their location, which means, as the guy said in the movie Gladiator, they've been busy bees. Given what happened at Notre Dame, I expect that's true. But right now, starting today, we're in the middle of European elections from the 23rd to the 27th, the ECB elections in 27 countries. You have 5,000 candidates. We also just had the equivalent of an Austrian coup, where the chancellor basically replaced all the right-wing ministers with technocrats. And every time you turn around and you see these things, you think, there's the Bilderbergers. They're on the move. But in fact, TruStream was so struck by the fact that they hadn't announced the meeting location, they made a video about it, which is quite charming, up on the website. But you can also get it by going to their Patreon account. Theresa May is, things are going from bad to worse. She's expected to announce the details of her transition out of Downing Street relatively soon. She's had a cabinet revolt, and I should point out that Nigel Farage's Brexit party looks like it's on course for a landslide victory today. So let's see what the announcements say tomorrow. As I said, President Trump has assigned ownership of the directive to that's the declassification directive. He's assigned the ownership to Barr. And this was pretty predictable. The purpose of the declassification would be to facilitate the DOJ review/investigation of how the intelligence apparatus was used in the 2016 election. There's some good coverage on this up at the Last Refuge. Their URL is the Conservative Treehouse. And check it out, because it's going to be very interesting to see what Barr does with the incredible power that he now has accepted or been had transferred to him. So he's in the catbird seat. I told you that Trump did a deal with the Bushies. So the question is, you know, what was that deal and where is that deal going to go? T-Mobile and Sprint merger is continuing to move ahead. The FCC has given it their okay so long as, and strong arm, T-Mobile and Sprint put together a major effort to roll out 5G at high speed in rural America. Big ads today on the Wall Street Journal because they still have to get through the Department of Justice. This was only the FCC. But you can see the push is on by the president and the administration to get 5G rolled out as fast as possible. Abortion, I normally don't talk about things like abortion, but we are watching extraordinary efforts at the state level to dramatically change the abortion laws one way or the other. Some are far more liberal, some are far more conservative. One of the things that's happening is we have a real absence of transparency around the discussion of what human versus inhuman means, what transhumanism is, and we need some real transparency around what has really been pushing for abortions. Where has the real political juice come from? Because increasingly it's looking to me like it's coming from the pharmaceutical companies who need the aborted fetal tissue. And now with stem cells being really proved out, that's just going to create more demand for that kind of tissue. So we need to have an open conversation about what is really going on with abortions, where the political support was, how it came to be the way it is, and what are the economics of what is done with that aborted fetal tissue. We need to know. And I think it's really important to change the framework on this, to integrate it with all the different things we're seeing across society, which I would describe as inhuman, and integrate it with our commitment to build a human civilization. Because, you know, you see these women who are at the announcement when Cuomo announced early term abortions in New York. You see these women who think they're fighting for human rights, and they have no idea that the real economics is being driven by the money and a plan to basically cycle that stuff into vaccinations, which are then, you know, injected into us. It's pretty scary what's in them and what's happening. We need to change the frame. And part of that is just having an open conversation. When I was in Michigan, I landed just as that day Ford was cutting 10% of their salaried workforce. That's a huge cut. And I suspect there's more to come from a lot of big companies, particularly as the markets change and as the Chinese trade war means we have to bring more back to the U.S. I'm hoping that that capacity can be re-engaged. The question is what's coming back and how fast. Farmageddon. I started to use this expression, last money in markets. We're getting reports from all over the country and reports from all over the world that planting has been interrupted by weather. Of course, we see big floods around the United States and indications, I'm near the mighty Mississippi River, that it's going to get worse. What this means is beware the rise in food prices. I just put in another bunch of bulk orders today because I said, you know, I'm just going to stockpile. We have a new piece in News Trends and Stories, and I tweeted out from Farrell on disaster capitalism. And he talks a little bit about whether or not this weather is natural or not. Obviously, given the technologies and the application we've seen of them so far, I'm very suspicious. So is he. It's a very good piece. There is a major package underway, just announced this week, from the administration to support farmers and ranchers to make up for loss from the China trade. $16 billion. Trump indicates that the price tag is going to be covered by the China tariffs. Finally, the Congress and the White House reached a deal on $19.1 billion in disaster aid. So that package is for Puerto Rico. That package is for things that happened in California. That package is for military bases that have been destroyed by, I think it's one of the hurricanes in Florida. One of the interesting things to get that done, Trump gave up on his fight for more money on the wall, and you wonder what that's about. Anyway, you know, the farmers are really expecting to get hurt, particularly over soybeans with the China trade. And now this package and no doubt the disaster relief money getting to a variety of places will help sort of offset what is the pain which has already started. $64,000 question. Why was Barr giving an interview to Fox News from an El Salvador jail? We see Barr go to El Salvador. It's explained that he is going to talk with the leadership about how to make sure MS-13 isn't coming north and making crazy throughout North America. That's the official story. I think there's something bigger going on. If you look at the extent to which Barr was involved in Iran-Contra, you know, it makes you wonder what when he's down there on the old Iran-Contra turf, what is going on? I would love to know. Our interview this evening is, I'm interviewing myself. It's a monologue on Deep State Tactics 101. I was going to do this as part of the Missing Money Personal History, but I got to the end and said, you know, I really want to explain all the tactics and I want to give the stories and I want to be free to go into all of it, complete coverage of everything I've learned about tactics. I decided, okay, we're going to make it a separate series on the Solari Report, but it's a great thing to listen to and read in connection with the personal history on the missing money. I've certainly seen a lot of tactics. The outline for the full series is in the commentary. And as you can see, to go through the different specific tactic areas, 16 areas, it's a lot. Anyway, I hope you enjoy it. it's really frustrating to go back and walk through the whole 30 years and start to realize, it's hard to revisit some of it. Our hero this week is Robert F. Smith, who is a venture capitalist and billionaire who was asked to be the commencement speaker at Morehouse College and announced during his commencement speech that he and his family were going to gift $40 million to pay off all the student loan of all the graduating members of the class of 2019. And you watch his announcement and you watch the students go crazy and you realize, you know, that's what real adults do. Real adults don't, target young people with predatory tricks. Real adults don't go to Congress and get the model changed so you can make more money on students failing than on them succeeding. So you watch it and you say, there's an adult in the room. God love him. Robert F. Smith, thank you. I also wanted to give a shout out to the Missing Money A-Team who are listed. Remember, the full 2018 annual wrap-up is at the web presentation. It's all done. You can access it there anytime. But the Missing Money A-Team is there, and it's part of Volume 2. There have been many, many people who have demonstrated extraordinary courage and intellectual talent and energy to get this story basically out and explained. And I always get frustrated when people say, why is no one doing anything? This is a list of people who've done a lot. Our movie this evening is Gladiator. As I said before, Ridley Scott was the director, and Scott is one of my favorite directors of all time, and Gladiator is one of my favorite movies of all time. It's fabulous, but it shows a lot about deep state tactics. It describes Roman times, but those tactics are alive and well now. I also put in a video trailer of Enemy of the State, which was done by Tony Scott, Ridley's brother, and to this day, I think it's one of the most masterful movies on how the deep state works and demonstrating a lot of deep state tactics. Ask Catherine. Wow, we only have one question. Catherine, I went back and listened to your assertions several times to make sure I heard you correctly. You said in your last Money and Markets commentary that after World War II, U.S. intelligence, the Vatican agreed to develop networks to open U.S. markets to drugs and launder the money through the Vatican Bank. You also said a few months ago that the Jesuits were running organized crime in Philadelphia when you were growing up. Is there any source I could find to back up these assertions rather than the Godfather movies? I always enjoy listening and thinking about what you have to say. Thank you. So here's what I wrote back. I will go back and review my books on narcotics trafficking to see what would be most useful. The one I would recommend to start is more focused on the institutional goals of the Vatican and NATO and the end of the war and how it evolved. So it's more Vatican-centric than narcotic-centric. And that's from Penguin Random House, Operation Gladio by Paul Williams. Operation Gladio by Paul Williams. So I continued, the Jesuits were not running organized crime in Philadelphia when I was growing up. It was a partnership of the U.S. intelligence, U.S. military, particularly the Navy, as Philadelphia was still a major port at that time. The big capital pool players like family offices, foundation, and endowments, the Masons, the Jesuits in the Archdiocese, and a collection of Jewish interests. I saw more of the Mason and Catholic organization than how the Jewish group was organized. It's helpful to look at the history of how O and I worked with the Mafia on the Sicily landing in World War II, as I believe that the part of the operations, once the decision was made at the very top of families like the Rockefellers to open the U.S. to drugs, to pool capital, a lot of the operations grew out of that relationship, and that's part of what you see in the Godfather series. I would also recommend you take a look at Christopher Simpson's excellent book, Blowback, because one of the things you realize as you get into the Operation Gladio operations and story and sort of how this all started and evolved is that there was a powerful need for slush fund money. So in Blowback, Christopher Simpson describes how the Dulles brothers are sitting at Sullivan and Cromwell. The CIA doesn't even exist yet, or it's just being sort of invented. And they use the war booty in the Exchange Stabilization Fund to rig the Italian elections at the request of the Vatican. And it goes from there. But what you realize is, I sometimes say all American history is the story of how they came up with the money to replenish the slush fund. Anyway, so that's what I would do. I'd start with Paul Williams' book on Operation Gladio, very good book, and Christopher Simpson's book, Blowback, and also educate yourself about the relationship between ONI and the Italian mafia to help engineer the Sicily landing and the military operations in Italy during the war. Okay, that's it for this evening. Next week, we have the emerging multipolar world with the Saker. Then we'll go back to deep state tactics, part two, and I may need to do a part three. And then we'll complete the first quarter wrap-up. Will ESG push the red button? And that's going to be very interesting. That's sort of on the development of technocracy in the investment world. Ladies and gentlemen, until next week with the emerging multipolar world with Saker, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Good night and good luck. Thank you.